This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Cole Porter wrote songs for Ethel Merman. My guest Jeff Moss writes for Miss Piggy, Oscar the Grouch, and Cookie Monster. Unlike Ethel Merman, Miss Piggy is never gracious enough to credit her songwriter, but will give him his due today. Moss has been a songwriter for Sesame Street since the show premiered 26 years ago. He's also served as the show's head writer. The songs he wrote for the film The Muppets Take Manhattan earned him an Oscar nomination. He's won 4 Grammys. His best-known song, Rubber Ducky, was a top 40 hit. Recently, Jeff Moss has been writing children's books. His latest is called Hieronymus White, A Bird Who Believed That He Always Was Right. It's always fun to hear composers sing their own songs, so last fall we invited Jeff Moss to join us in our studio at the piano to sing some of the songs that turned the Muppets into stars. Jeff Moss, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, Terry.
Why don't we start with the song that's your chart buster? It actually made it to, I think, number 16 on the Billboard chart.
Something like that. Back a few years ago, the highest on the charts ever, I think, for a song sung by a guy in a bathtub. A rubber ducky, you're the one. You make bath time lots of fun. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you. Vovodio, rubber ducky, joy of joys. When I squeeze you, you make noise. Rubber ducky, you're my very best friend, it's true. Oh, every day when I make my way to the tubby, I find a little fellow who's cute and yellow and chubby. Rub-a-dub-dubby, rubber ducky, you're so fine. And I'm lucky that you're mine. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of. Rubber ducky, I'd like a whole pond of. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you.
Great. I should have been squeezing it in the background. Right.
In fact, it was I who was squeezing it in the background
on
those
record.
Many years ago on the record, yeah.
So how did you write the song?
Well, depending which story I tell, either it was very late at night and I was there alone in my tub with my rubber duck just overcome with the poetry of the song, or I had created a character of the rubber duck for Ernie, and it was just, he loved it. It was his passion, his obsession, and it just overflowed that way.
And Jeff Moss, you were one of the original writers on Sesame Street. When you signed on to do the show, was it understood you'd be writing songs, too, and that songs would be an important part of the program?
In fact, we thought that songs might be an important part of the program, but no. Joe Raposo was the original music director, and we were going to use records, and we found out because it was public television, it was very hard to clear the rights to use them. So Joe came to me and said, well, look, you write words and music, I write words and music, why don't we just do it? We'll write to the curriculum, we'll do it faster. Joe was wonderfully ebullient. He said, we'll do it better, let's just go do it, and we did it.
Were you already writing songs? Did you have confidence you could do this?
Oh, sure.
What kind of songs had you been writing?
Well, from the time I was 9 or 10, I'd been writing songs to, entertain my friends. And then in college, I'd written the musical comedy stuff in college. And then my first job, which had been at another children's television show called Captain Kangaroo, I'd written a lot of songs for there.
Huh. So now you were also in on the creation of some of the characters,
mm-hmm.
like Cookie Monster.
Indeed.
And Oscar.
Indeed.
Tell us about creating Cookie Monster.
Well, Cookie Monster, Jim and his people had created the physical monsters before Sesame Street, but they had always been quite scary, and they never spoke. But they were just such wonderful puppets that I went into somebody's office one day and said, well, how about that furry blue one with the boggly eyes? Could he maybe talk? And they said, well, the puppeteers don't talk very much, and they're scary. And so I said, well, what if he doesn't talk very much, and I try to make him funny? And they said, well, go ahead and do it. And I wrote a bit for him in which he had two words, and one of them was milk, and the other one was cookie. And we were in the studio, and Frank Oz performed him just so brilliantly, we all fell off the seats, and I went back and started writing more.
Oh, I think this is a song cue. Why don't you do a Cookie Monster song?
Yeah, this is what he has for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner, but he sings about breakfast today. He says, me have a soft boiled cookie with a glass of cookie juice on the side, or for a change one morning me will have me cookie scrambled or fried. It isn't hard each morning to keep me satisfied. Just give me a soft boiled cookie, please, with a glass of cookie juice on the side.
That's great. So was the voice your idea or Frank Oz's idea?
Oh, no, that's a poor imitation of Frank Oz, whose idea it was.
Mm-hmm. Now, you co-created Oscar.
Co-created Oscar, yeah.
And how did he come about?
He came about because the educators had suggested that we have a character who showed kids that it wasn't necessary to be cheerful all the time. So a grouch was created, and it was decided that he lived in a trash can, and then we sat down and kind of created this wonderful vicious circle for him, where if you make him happy, he hates that, and that makes him unhappy, but being unhappy makes him happy, so he likes that, but that makes him unhappy, etc., etc., etc. Meanwhile, he has his obsession and his passion, which is Oscar sings,
"Oh, I love trash. Anything dirty or dingy or dusty. Anything ragged or rotten or rusty. Oh, I love trash."
I like the idea that you put that in waltz time.
Yes, indeed. It was a good juxtaposition of trying to write a pretty waltz for a yucky character.
Did educators ever object to the fact that he was an unsanitary puppet?
Do you know, they didn't, but we think that today, if we were creating today, they might have. You know, they might have worried that kids would crawl in garbage cans and all that, but they never did. So the writers feel that the kids can discriminate. The educators test it out. We don't.
When you were younger, you had ambitions of writing Broadway musicals?
Well, in fact, I probably did, yeah. I grew up, I guess, during the late 50s, and I can remember, my father was on the stage, my father was an actor, and I can remember...
Really? Would I know him?
Arnold Moss, his name was, and he was a Shakespearean actor, and my earliest memories are theater memories, and I can remember The King and I, and that kind of stuff, but by the time I was old enough to try it, it kind of was going in a different direction than it had been going, and I found Sesame Street, and that's the direction everything went.
Broadway, I imagine, was going in the ersatz rock direction?
It was going in rock, and it was going in the area where the songs were less important, where the production was much more important, and Bob Fosse's and Tommy Tune's and those people who were brilliant, but they were the stars. They were the people who were using, you know, the Gershwin songs rather than the new writer's songs.
Now, you got to write a Broadway musical in the sense that you wrote the songs for The Muppets Take Manhattan,
mm-hmm.
which is about
Absolutely.
The Muppets going to Manhattan to do
a Broadway
show.
Yes, at the Biltmore Theater.
did you get a chance to write the kinds of songs for that were very close to what you would have written for the stage?
I don't think so. They were more the kinds of songs that I would have written if I had been doing the Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland movies
right.
of the 30s, which is another way that one might look at Kermit and Piggy, and the show that they put on was a very glitzy Broadway show. But there was jazz in that score that I wrote, and there was rock, and there was waltzes again, and kind of ragtime.
You got an Academy Award nomination for the
yeah.
songs that you wrote for The Muppets Take Manhattan. Let me ask you to do one of the songs from there. It's a song you wrote for Miss Piggy about how she wants to be a movie star.
Yeah, she wanted to be everything and love her man at the same time. She's saying, "I want to be a movie star, and I want to learn to drive a car. I want to be a veterinarian, too, and I'm going to always love you." Then she's saying, "I'll be the cutest model you ever saw, and then I think I'll study criminal law. And I'm going to learn to scuba dive, too, and I'm going to always love you." Went on, and she wanted to climb the Matterhorn, but only after all her children were born. And she wanted to be a good mommy, too, but I want to always love you.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jeff Moss, and he's been writing for Sesame Street ever since the show began. He's written many of the sketches and many, many of the songs. And he also writes books for children now, and his latest is called Aronimus White. You must have been really shocked when Jim Henson died so suddenly a few years ago.
It was awful. It was totally unexpected and as devastating as any death has been to me. I got a call from a friend of mine at 3 o'clock in the morning who said, sit down, and it's the only call. We stayed on the phone till 4 o'clock in the morning, and then I went back to bed and just didn't want to get up. Felt that if I didn't read it in the paper or didn't hear it on the radio or the TV, then it wouldn't have happened. It was a terrible loss, and it shouldn't have happened. I mean, it was, if he had been in the hospital 12 hours earlier, they would have given him penicillin and he would have been fine.
He had a bacterial infection. Was he working through that, working while he was sick?
But he was sick for 48 hours. I mean, it wasn't that he had such a phenomenal endurance that what would have sent anybody but him to the hospital to find out what was wrong, he probably just said, oh, gee, I'm feeling tired. I mean, he didn't need very much sleep. He had endless energy and was not, he was sick for a long weekend. That's all he was sick.
What happened on the show afterwards? Did you all stop working for a while?
The show, as I remember, we were not in production at the time, so I think it was the spring that he died, and we were not in production then. And just only now have new Kermit pieces begun to be done, as somebody else does Kermit, and we're seeing if we may do a few Ernie and Bert bits.
So you had thought the characters would be retired?
Well, they were retired in the sense of doing new material, but there's a library of 20-something years of them, so an average Sesame Street new show, maybe 50% of the material is new and 50% of it is from 22 years, and most of the stuff that Jim did is so classic that you wouldn't know whether it was year 3 or year 23, so the show has not felt his the lack of his presence the same way life has. Life has felt the lack of his presence.
My guest is Sesame Street songwriter Jeff Moss. He also writes children's books. His latest is called Hieronymus White, A Bird Who Believed That He Always Was Right. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Jeff Moss, one of the writers on Sesame Street, writers of sketches and songs, and also he writes books. His latest is called Hieronymus White. No, your first job after college, I think, was working on Captain Kangaroo as a
production
assistant.
Assistant.
What was the job description?
There was no job description. The woman who hired me said, well, we have jobs for production assistant. You could choose either the CBS News or Captain Kangaroo. And I was being very young and flip, and I said, well, I've seen the news. And I hadn't seen Kangaroo, and that's where I ended up.
So you didn't grow up watching Captain Kangaroo?
No.
I'll confess, I never liked the show when I was growing up. I couldn't understand the attraction of what seemed to me to be an old man wearing overalls. and it was such a non-urban show to me that I just never related to
it. Well, it wasn't non-urban, though it did have a moose who liked to drop ping pong balls on people's heads, which was not urban, but neither was it particularly rural. But it's funny. It had a lot of funny stuff in it and a lot of educational stuff that I guess maybe we didn't realize or the people who made the show didn't realize that it had. And I did that for 6 months and then came back as a writer for a couple of years. And it was a very nice place to begin.
So when you got the job on Sesame Street, were there things you felt you wanted to do different than the way you'd seen it done on Captain Kangaroo?
Everything about Sesame Street was new. The great thing was that we had a marvelous freedom that we didn't realize we had then. This is looking back on it. But Joan Cooney had raised a lot of money that couldn't be paid to anyone in salaries but could be spent on production. And we didn't have a network that we had to please. We didn't have stars that we had to please. We didn't have sponsors that we had to please. And we were committed to doing 130 hours of television. And there were four of us wrote 90% of the first year's show, and we could just have the most wonderful time as long as we were willing to work 37 hours a day. And we just did whatever we wanted to do that stuck to the curriculum. When in the early years when I was head writer, I used to say to the writers, look, the two jobs you have is one to keep the 3 to 5 year old watching the TV, and the other one is to write a show that if you were spinning the dial, you would stop and watch yourself. And that's what we did creatively from the very, very beginning.
Was every song supposed to carry a lesson with it?
Yes, and almost every song did, and almost every piece of material on Sesame Street did and does.
Do you have a song that's your favorite lyric for teaching something in a really entertaining way?
Of the recent songs that I've done, we began doing racial relations as a goal a few years ago, just several years ago, and they wanted a song that would kind of be the corner post of that. It's a film of kids at the beach, kids playing at the beach in their bathing suits, and this is the way I chose to deal with it. Skin covered all over with beautiful skin, skin covered all over from ankle to chin, lovely skin on knees and noses and everywhere, skin on tummies and toeses and under your hair, it's even there. Oh, skin, wonderful colors and beautiful tones, skin, think of without it, you're nothing but bones. Skin is ever so lovely no matter the color you're in. Let's hear it for skin. Beautiful skin, let's hear it for skin. Beautiful skin.
No, who sings that on the show?
It's the voice of Kevin Clash, who's one of the Muppets, but it's just a film of the kids playing at the beach. It's not a Muppet song.
That's a good song. Another of your little Tin Pan Alley numbers.
Yeah.
Well, you've been writing more books lately. And your new book is called Aronimus White. Tell us a little bit about the story, and then I want you to read the beginning of it.
Yeah, Hieronymus White, it's subtitled A Bird Who Believed That He Always Was Right, and it's about a bird who comes to believe that he always was right. It goes back to way before he was born, when his parents are very young, and goes through to the point that his granddaughter has grown up, and it shows the good things about believing you're always right and the bad things, and it traces his life and comes to a point where something happens that causes him to no longer believe that he's always right. This is the story of Hieronymus White, a bird who believed that he always was right. He was always an expert, whatever the task. He would share his advice. There was no need to ask. When his children came down with a fever or chills, he'd order the doctor to choose different pills. When the postman delivered a package or letter, Hieronymus told him how he could do better. He approached every issue so confidently, he'd seem shocked at the thought that you might not agree. Yes, all through a life that was famous and long, Hieronymus thought that he couldn't be wrong, till one day late in life when his feathers were thinning. So now let's go back to the very beginning. This is the story of Hieronymus White, a bird who believed that he always was right.
I really like that. I'm sure I know this character.
Yes, I think we all do.
This character has given me too much advice over the years. So what inspired you to write this story?
I think I wanted to write, firstly, about a person who believed that he always was right. I have known a number of them in my life, and sometime don't have to go too much farther than the mirror to find one. And also I wanted to write about continuity and about passing things on from one generation to the next. And I began the story, and it kind of took off and became what it became.
Let me get you to do a short grumpy poem from a previous collection of poems called The Butterfly Jar.
This is called Hi, How Are You Today? I'm feeling very horrible and low and mean and mad and dreadful and deplorable and rotten, sick and sad and nasty and unbearable and hateful, vile and blue. But thanks a lot for asking, and please tell me, how are you?
Very good. Well, it's really been a pleasure.
Me too.
Having you here on the show, I've really enjoyed it a lot. I'd love for you to end with a song, and you have actually a very sweet song about goodbyes. Maybe you can do that. Tell us first how you wrote it.
It's from the Muppets Take Manhattan, and it comes at a time when the Muppets are not being successful in their quest to become stars on Broadway, so they all have to split up and go in their various directions, and this is the song they sing. Saying goodbye, going away, seems like goodbye's such a hard thing to say. Touching a hand, wondering why, it's time for saying goodbye. Saying goodbye, why is it sad? Makes us remember the good times we've had. Much more to say, foolish to try. It's time for saying goodbye. Don't want to leave, still we both know. Sometimes it's better to go. Somehow I know we'll meet again. Don't know just where, and I'm not sure just when. You're in my heart, so until then. Want to smile, want to cry, saying goodbye.
Jeff Moss recorded last fall. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.